Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Hail Varsity Radio, Wednesday edition, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Erbel in today. Hope you do it all right. Sunshine getting heated up. Baseball tonight at TD Ameritrade for the mother of all dog piles. And a collective sigh and scream of joy from Big Ten country, if you can vanquish the mighty SEC. The mighty Vanderbilt Commodores. We'll get into a little CWS. Always football to talk on Hail Varsity Radio. We'll get into the transfer tweaks by the Twits by the NCAA. That coming up. We have plenty of insight as well. Rick Pizzo. Pizzo's been slammed. You know, when you get off vacation, there is a stack of crap on your desk. Those that get vacation. Pizzo's, God love him. He's given us about 10, 12 minutes today. We'll talk with Mr. Rick in about 20 minutes or so. Bill Bender from the Sporting News. We'll get into some Big Ten discussion with him. And how about Aaron Sorensen of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. In my hand, in Elijah's hand, we have the physical copy of the Hail Varsity yearbook. Red cover, Adrian Martinez on the cover. Phenomenal story by Aaron Sorensen. Phenomenal work by Derek Peterson, Mike Babcock, Jacob Padilla. Greg Smith's story on the Nebraska recruiting board is awesome. Listen, I know every year in June and in July, I tell you to get a Hail Varsity yearbook, and I mean it every year. I really mean it this year. And easy to subscribe on HailVarsity.com. Get your subscription, get your premium content. There's my sales pitch. It really speaks for itself. Bill Bender, Aaron Sorensen, Rick Pizzo, and Shuey. Mike Shuart joins us in 30 minutes. Talk a little golf. You can get in at 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com and find me on Twitter, Chris Schmidt at Schmidt underscore radio. Give Elijah a follow at Herbal Essences, clearly an awesome Twitter handle and a good Twitter follow. So Elijah's been a while, brother. What do you know?
Not much, to be honest. Went up to College World Series last night, got in some baseball. Been watching some Women's World Cup. I know you love soccer.
I don't hate soccer. I mean, I really honestly made my kid play it for a season or two longer than he wanted. And I mean, you have opinions of me already, but as far as like, you know, forced things that you'll hate your father for, I don't know where that's going to fall. We still got lots of time for him to grow his list. But him playing soccer has helped with his footwork for baseball and for basketball. That's kind of what I drilled into his head, and he was good at soccer somehow. He wasn't the fat Schmidt goalie that has found their way to the soccer pitch for years and years and years. So he was actually a participant. Nothing against goalies, you're important, but when you're in your early years and even before your teens, before you hit the growth spurt, some of the fat kids get stuck at goalie. It's okay. It's necessary. So I've not gotten into a ton of soccer. I know you're huge into it. CWS last night, were you going thinking that Michigan has a snowball's chance last night, or are you expecting a Vandy win?
Well, with that guy on the mound, there's nothing you can do, really. Dude threw a no-hitter. He was dealing last night. You say 19 Ks, I'm pretty sure.
He had 11 last night. He had 19 against Duke. Yeah.
Just dude's absurd. He struck out five of the first six. Once that game got going and I saw how he was pitching, I knew Michigan didn't stand a chance.
Well, good, so. Great atmosphere last night.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it. We have plans to move the Roku outside, turn the game on, and I've been ordered to pick up goodies to grill. So that's our plan tonight. The money line right now is Vandy minus 205. They're the favorite.
pretty heavy favorite.
You can get Michigan plus 185 right now. If you give Danny Burke's friends a call, legally, of course, that's what you do. So we'll get into some Nebraska football. We'll hit some CWS stuff as the day moves forward. I want to get into this transfer rule real quick before we hit some mailbag stuff with HailVarsity.com. And the Division I Council approved a package of updates and guidelines today that's going to make it more difficult for college football and basketball players who transfer to get immediate eligibility via waivers. So the standard practice is if you request a transfer and your reason being, I need to be closer to home, I need to be by a sibling, by a parent, by a family member, that's, for the most part, been pretty much good as gold to get you eligible almost immediately. In the instances of Ohio State situation and even Michigan with Shea Patterson, they weren't leaving for vicinity. They were leaving for playing time, and that's all there is to it. And they got immediately eligible, specifically in Michigan's instance. And it's going to work out well for them this year because Patterson had a chance to play last year. They were good, not great. I think he'll be pretty big time for him. But the NCAA's biggest problem is inconsistency. Jay Billis on Twitter blasting the NCAA and their tweaking of the transfer rules. And Jay's a smart dude. Jay gets it. Jay's got a legal mind, so I don't argue with him on much, not that he would care anyway. But his point is this: are athletes students or employees? Transfer restrictions are not based upon principle, but simply to deter an asset from moving. Clearly, athletes are employees with non-compete clauses disguised as transfer restrictions. And I think it's really, really difficult. Kids want to play. I get that. And you've been good at a certain level for a long time, and the very, very special ones can come in and play well right away. The guy on the cover of the yearbook, Adrian Martinez, he came in and played well and played right away. And it wasn't given to him. He earned it. He was the best option, and he flashed. He gained the coach's confidence and trust to pick him and go forward with him over Ajebia, to pick him and go with him over Bunch, to pick him and go with him over guys that have been in the program a lot longer. You see the upside, and you know you're going to take your lumps. 4-8 wasn't on him last year. If they didn't have him, they would have been probably 2-10. All right, he's that special. He's that good. And when you have a quarterback set up, that is going to be your game changer for a special season, for a good season, what you get out of your quarterback play. And the biggest problem you have wideouts and skill guys leaving. You do. And I don't have there's not data in front of me that says, okay, offensive and defensive linemen, they leave after X number of years. But to me, you have the lines of scrimmage that take a little bit longer to water, grow, develop, refine, and get kids ready to go play. You're going to spend some time on scout team. You're going to spend some time in the weight room, and then you're going to go get after it. Rarely are there Jadeveon Clownies that come in and kill it right away. Ndamukong Suh didn't blossom till his third season here, honestly, and it took a coaching change for that to happen. It takes time for the guys on the lines of scrimmage. Dudes can ball at the skill spots. Guys can come in and play at corner. Not that they're less important spots, and I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying there's some spots where stick a guy at wideout, have him do some things as he continues to learn. At corner, go be an athlete, go make plays, learn the defense, right? How cerebral are you? It's rough for linebackers to come in at an early age, call a defense, and be right and get everybody, the other 10, on the same page. Same as the quarterback spot. But with the quarterbacks, kids just come in, they're groomed for it, and they don't want to wait and sit. And the NFL is so big and so good at scouting they will find you if you can bowl, right? And that's the mentality. You don't want to wait. I don't even think it's a fear of competition. I think it's just reps and getting the eyeballs, because everybody's on TV, everyone's on social media. You're going to see a kid go out and perform. And there's a truth to the matter of a guy like Fromm down at Georgia came in, won the job, and has been fantastic, surrounded with great talent, but he's not screwed it up. Kid at Clemson is insanely good. I mean, that guy is really, really awesome. And he came in, and he supplanted a guy that has gotten him to the championship game, Kelly Bryant. Got him to the college football playoff, didn't he? I think so. So Clemson went with a different option. Ohio State had gone with a different option. And that's just the world we live in quarterbacks. Now it's a little bit harder to transfer. You don't even have to tell your coach. You just put your name in the portal and there you go. What they're tweaking right now, though, is the ability to immediately just jump ship. I have a problem with limiting kids' transfers ability if the coach leaves. I think all bets are off. If the coach bails, I think the kid should be able to bail. That's my take on it. But from a tweak here of the non-compete, yeah, I think it's not unreasonable to have some restrictions put on where you're not going to play right away. You're going to have to sit out. I think it makes sense because the kids, you don't always know best at age 18. You just don't. And it's okay to sit and learn for a year. It's okay to sit and learn for two. It's about putting you in the best position for success, because if you want to hurry up and get in there and you crap the bed, where's the faith with your teammates? Where's the faith with your coach? Where's your confidence level at? I mean, it's okay to be a little patient, and I think that has been lost in today's college athlete.
I like the point you made about how kids are 18 and they don't always make the right choice, and that's, I think, the main issue here is that coaches are, it's their job to bring people in and come get talent on their team, and they'll do whatever it takes.
Competition, got to breed it.
Yeah, but, and you hear the story of Brett Bielema down at Arkansas saying, telling some recruit, the recruit's name slips my mind now, but he said, stop being an expletive and come to Arkansas. And the recruit said, all right, I'm not going to Arkansas anymore. And he also, he texted.
So it was the hard sell.
Yeah, and they're going to pressure you guys, or pressure these 18-year-olds into coming to your university. And I think it's all right for a recruit to say, all right, I'm a year in. This system doesn't fit me. My talents aren't being showcased here as well as I'd like. I want to get out. I think that's okay, just because when you're 18, you don't know everything. You think one option might look great, and then you get on campus and you spend 6 months there and you realize, oh, no, I've made a mistake. And I don't think we should punish guys for that.
No, I don't. There's a point, though, where it is about putting in the work, getting better, and also being coachable, too, as an 18, 19, 20-year-old. And don't kid yourself, man. It's you look at Alabama's situation between Jalen and Tua. Tua was gone. Tua was going to transfer until Hurts was extremely ineffective. Tua comes in, has the second half he has against Georgia, and the rest is history. And you need a guy on that quarterback roster that's going to push your starter so he can't put his feet up. What's the biggest complaint Nebraska fans have had about quarterback play? You've had nobody pushing a Tommy Armstrong or a Taylor Martinez. You didn't have a better backup option. Not that those guys were bad. They were very talented. They won a lot of ball games. They were tough dudes. They sold it for the program. They need to be commended. But there's no one that was going to take their job. There's no one that was going to take your job. And that's a double-edged sword. You get a guy that's a four-year guy, a three-year guy, and leaves early. What can you stockpile? I think that's where Nebraska's going to be different. I think Nebraska's going to be different because they're going to go get a quarterback or two, it feels like, every class. They're going to go get fits, and they're going to go get personality types. But, yeah, they want to play, but they understand that there is time to get better. You can have a two-year starting career. Not everyone's a four-year guy. Not everyone's a three-year starter. That's ideal. That's nice. Trevor Lawrence is phenomenal. He'll be gone in three. Adrian Martinez, 3 years maybe four. I don't know. I mean, the sky's the limit for Adrian. Shea Patterson probably was a guy that would have been a three-year starter from day one, right? But you don't have very many examples of the Peyton Mannings back in the day that came in and started at Tennessee. Tommy Frazier is very rare as a true freshman for Nebraska to come in and start. And it took him six games, and he's as good as it gets. Crouch played as a redshirt freshman, but he still redshirted. So I think there needs to be a little bit more understanding by parents, by 7-on-7 coaches, by those in the kid's ear if the kid doesn't recognize immediately. I look at McCaffrey, and McCaffrey's a freak athlete. McCaffrey is going to be a nice option for Nebraska quarterback. I look at his older brother, and I look at the McCaffrey family as an example. And the older McCaffrey was a high-profile, big-time get out of Valor Christian at quarterback, and he's still behind Patterson. McCaffrey family's not let their kids leave. He's still there. He may get 1 year. He may be a Trubisky at Carolina and just get one season. But he's sticking with it. You're learning. You're getting better. It's okay to stick and stay, and the NFL may and very well could still find you. But there's more restrictions now, and it's not going to be as easy to just kind of clear the dorm room out, transfer, and then get the waiver. Rick Pizzo's up next on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back to you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It's Big Ten Buffet time. He has been extremely busy. We are excited to talk with Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Mr. Rick, how have you been, man?
Chris, I got to be honest with you. I am busier in the month of June than I've probably ever been before, and I think we can attribute all of that to the Michigan Wolverines and this ridiculous run that not a single person saw coming, and if anybody tried to tell you they did, they're going to look like Pinocchio because they're lying.
Blame Kenny Chesney. Coach Backage took his kids to see Kenny Chesney at PBA that was in Lincoln after Nebraska had done some work to him that final regular season series, and they've been loose and free and playing great baseball. Tommy Henry is awesome. That kid was phenomenal. He has stepped up. I know it didn't go Michigan's way last night. Got to ask you, though, what's this mean, big picture, for the Big Ten? Indiana was in Omaha with Schwarber not long ago. Michigan's not just shown up. They've kind of thrived here.
Yeah, it means a lot for the league because it's a conversation that we have every year, you know, that a cold weather, quote-unquote, team or cold weather conference simply can't match up with those from the SEC and the ACC. Now, quantity-wise, Chris, that's probably true. Mm-hmm. I mean, year in and year out, you're going to see more ACC and SEC teams in Omaha than you're going to see Big Ten teams. That's just the nature of the game when you can play outside 12 months out of the year. But you mentioned Indiana's run. Remember, a year ago, Minnesota had a terrific run that got ended by eventual national champion Oregon State. Now it's Michigan. So it's not as if it's just one team carrying the water from the conference. This talent is now trickling down everywhere. And I will tell you what is going to be remarkably important, and that is the retention of head coach Eric Backage. Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt head coach, is set to make $1.3 million this year. Eric Backage, $425,000. One of these things is not like the other. Mm-hmm. Backage is going to be a wanted commodity. If you want to stay a relatively important team in your sport, you have to keep the guy that has gotten you there. And I think that's one of the most important priorities for Athletic Director Ward Manuel this summer. Sign Backage to a long-term extension and give that man some money.
Got to pay him. He has been phenomenal. And you look at what Backage has done when it comes to helping build programs and where he's taken Michigan and his patience level, too. I mean, he's been up for big-time jobs, and Michigan was, I don't want to say lucky, but Michigan found the right guy, obviously, and now you need to take care of that guy you found. And I love that Michigan's kind of flipped the switch. They went from not being in to bubble time and to, hey, let's just go major league here with Lou Brown, with Corvallis and out in la-la land, and then they have been dominant. How do you see tonight shaking out here? What do you think about Kauffman on the hill?
Well, he has a terrific pitching matchup. Carl Kauffman from Michigan, who has just been an absolute workhorse, a little bit shorter rest than he typically gets. He goes Friday and then goes again Friday. This is Friday to Wednesday. He's going to be so juiced up. There's so much adrenaline. I don't think it matters. Backage was asked about that last night. He said, listen, Carl's a veteran guy. He knows how to take care of his body in between starts. He will be totally ready. And remember, Jeff Criswell did not come out of the bullpen last night. So you really basically have two starters tonight. Kauffman will go. If there's any trouble, you have the availability of Criswell. For Vanderbilt, Mason Hickman may not have the upside of Kumar Rocker, the guy who we saw shut down Michigan on Tuesday night, but his numbers over the course of the year were actually better. He's just a sophomore. Rocker was a freshman, so the future at Vanderbilt is right now, and that future tonight is a terrific pitcher facing off against a grinder from Michigan and Kauffman. I would be surprised if this were not a low-scoring game, especially with the fact that those bats have been a little quiet for both teams. Obviously, Vanderbilt on Monday, both squads last night. I think this is going to be an awesome baseball game, and this is the way you want it. As a college baseball fan, you have one game to decide the national champion. I'm going to be so dialed in.
I can't wait for it either. We've had a chance to do a couple of shows up right across from TD Ameritrade last week, and the atmosphere and energy is great, and you've had a lot of the Big Red faithful shift to temporary Michigan fans, and I didn't know that I'd see that ever, based on the frenemies type mentality, yeah, with Michigan Nebraska during the Big Ten tournament. But it'd be great for the league. Will Bolt, a guy I've covered over my career, is back in Lincoln, Nebraska, getting the top assistant from Texas A&M. It's been about a week or so since the announcement, a little over, as Bolt unveiled last Thursday. I know you've had a chance to digest a little bit about Bolt in Nebraska. What do you think of the Husker program moving forward?
Well, let's be honest, Chris. I mean, I think Bolt's name was the first name that we heard when Darren Erstad decided to step away and retire from coaching. I don't think there's any doubt that for Bill Moose, it was the first name on his card. You know, those athletic directors will tell you they have a card, and it's in their back pocket at almost all times, and they have three possible candidates to replace their football coach, three to replace their men's basketball coach, and one or two to replace every other sport, and they have to have it immediately. I guarantee you that Bolt was number one on that baseball list for Bill Moose. So you go out and you get your guy. And give Bill Moose some credit now, because this is probably three coaches, right, in a row who have been his guy, the first guy on that list. If you're talking about Frost, Hoiberg, and Bolt, those are the first three guys that had to be on that card. And those guys are all in Lincoln. So let's give credit where credit is due. As for the Husker program, you know what this does, Chris? It keeps it continuous. Yes, there's a shift, but there's not a shift in culture, because there's a guy who understands the program, understands the culture, has been watching the players, I'm sure, closely, knows the roster that he inherits. I don't think there will be any type of fall off at all in recruiting to me. And you know me, I'm always a wait and see guy. I even said that about Hoiberg. But with this hire, there is no reason to think that there is any change or any fall off at all in the way Nebraska baseball operates.
No, and I mean, similar mentality to Erstad. You've got Texas ties and JUCO ties with Bolt. And you got a guy that knows how to recruit in-state and also eye talent, get some more of that developed talent from the JUCO ranks to find their way to Lincoln. And I loved his response about what's your style, what's your philosophy, and we got the old Charlie Sheen winning response, and it was pretty good by Bolt, and excited to have him back on the in the dugout at Haymarket Park. Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Buffet, Hail Varsity Radio. Follow Rick on Twitter at BTN Rick Pizzo. Rick, the NBA draft last week, we had a chance to get caught up with Isaiah Roby on Monday. He's just smiling. He's happy. Drafted by Detroit, sent to Dallas, and a lot of Big Ten draft picks. I know Bruno ended up going In the second round as well, and Beilein making his first splash as head coach of Cleveland. But what you take on Roby here, the situation and just the upside with Roby, what do you kind of predict for him this first year? Do you think he went about as high as he could?
Yes, I think he went about as high as he could because there's still work to be done. You've heard the phrase upside or potential or if only Isaiah Roby knew how good he could possibly be. Mm-hmm. That's all fine and good in college. When you get to the NBA, nobody cares how good you could possibly be. They care how good you are. Now, I think the situation is good because at Dallas, you probably have more time to grow. I don't think you're looking at a team that expects to be an immediate contender. Obviously, if you ask the Dallas administration and the GM, they would tell you otherwise. But I think people who know basketball don't expect that team to be an immediate contender. So you have some room to grow. To me, though, it comes down to that 15 to 18 foot jumper, because at Roby's size and athleticism, he could dominate when he wanted and when he turned it on in college. Almost everybody at that position has that size and athleticism. They have that athleticism with more size, with a bigger body. So the only way you offset that is to become a more confident and consistent jump shooter, and Roby is not that right now. He will spend all summer in the gym trying to knock down 18-footers because I'll tell you, at his size and athletic ability, if you can make consistently an 18-foot jumper with a guy in your face, you can stay in the league for a very long time. If you can't, you'll get swallowed up and you'll be out of the league before you've had your cup of coffee.
Rick Pizzo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Rick, you get one coach to pick in the Big Ten for football to win you a football game. Who you drafting?
If I'm not counting roster, I'm probably drafting Mark Antonio because of what I've seen him do with rosters that were less talented than other players. If you're asking me to do so with the rosters that currently exist, I think it's Ryan Day. Because even after you lose Dwayne Haskins, you still have a former five-star recruit in Justin Fields. Even after you lose guys like Paris Campbell and Johnny Dixon on the outside, you still have K.J. Hill and Chris Olave and deep threats everywhere. Even after you lose Mike Weber to the NFL, you have J.K. Dobbins, who led the team in rushing. Let me go to the defensive side. Even after you lose Nick Bosa, you have Chase Young, who could be the top overall pick in next year's draft. I understand that Urban Meyer will go into the College Football Hall of Fame as one of the greatest coaches of all time. But part of the reason that you are one of the greatest coaches of all time, Urban will tell you this, Nick Saban will tell you this, you can be the most brilliant mind ever. Unless you get 4- and 5-star recruits to your program, you are not going to win national championships. Ryan Day has that in Columbus, in bunches. I think he is an absolute rock star, rising star, and I don't think there is going to be as much of a fall off in Columbus as many people believe there will be.
It's still a highly, highly anticipated game, Nebraska-Ohio State. Not many here expect an Ohio State to be wounded or wobbly. Should be exciting. Rick, can't wait to catch up and see you in Chicago for Media Days. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Always my pleasure, Chris. Have a great week, buddy.
Gotta love Rick Pizzo all over Michigan and Vandy tonight. Thoughts on Nebraska and Roby. Kind of covered the gamut with Pizzo in a little less than 25 minutes. Bill Bender going to be with us. Sporting News. Aaron Sorensen on the way. A reminder to, we'll run down Shuey and talk a little golf with him. A reminder to buckle up. I tell you about it every day, and I mean it every day. Something's got to stop that motion. Airbags aren't enough. Seatbelts save lives, and they keep you from flying through that windshield. Seatbelts prevent excessive injury. When your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry, that applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. We'll ask the question to Bill Bender about Nebraska's most important game for 2019. A lot of candidates spent time yesterday on what's that record got to be. There's 7 games that we figure could be, might be, one-score games. We'll head to the golf course next. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Erbel. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. As Shuey on the way, we're presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's head out to the, I don't know if he's on the in the chipping area, if he's on the putting green, or if he's on the driving range. We say hi to our friend with Wilderness Ridge, Mike Shuhart. Shuey, you're helping folks swing better. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate you, man. And we got to get a Divot Dog update. How was the weekend?
It was a pretty good weekend. 2 firsts and 2 seconds. So we're cruising. We're killing it. So we got big tournaments coming up on Monday and Tuesday, back-to-back events. So see if we can keep it rolling.
All right. What's the pep talk, or do you give any pep talks?
No pep talks. We just go through all of what a Divot Dog stands for. First thing a Divot Dog stands for, they have to have fun when they go play.
All right.
That's number one. Always have fun.
And when they come see you 20 years later, you still remind them of that.
Oh, yeah. Every time. Every time. You always have to remind them of that. Because it's a game, man. We're supposed to be out there having fun, even though this game sometimes can be a little brutal on us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then second is they have to act like a gentleman or a lady. So they have to respect their opponents. They have to respect the golf course. And then third, of course, is we want to win. So always got to throw that in there.
Third is win. So there's no bull dance allowed?
We do a little chant before we go. We do a little, they call it a break, I guess. I'm old school. I didn't know that. But get okay. in there and do a one, two, three Divot Dogs.
Okay.
Just throw a little intimidation out there to all the other teams.
I like it. Mike Shuhart's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Shuey, I got to ask you, you spent a lot of time, you still coach and you still teach and you still mentor. You spent a lot of time in your career as a college coach as well. And I want to get your take here with the NCAA, your perspective here. They've tweaked the guidelines when it comes to football and basketball players who transfer to receive immediate eligibility waivers. They're tweaking that, and it's not going to be as easy to leave one spot and go to another, step in and play. And you've seen it be a major, major issue with the quarterback position. What's your take on the NCAA still allowing the transfers to happen in droves, but they're going to be a little more stringent on the ability to step in and play right away?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a different college environment now than it was years ago, you know, because if coaches are allowed to leave easily, mm-hmm. then why shouldn't the student athlete be held to a different standard, you know, different guidelines? That's the thing. I mean, I don't think you saw as many coaching changes and a lot as mobility
right.
as there is now, you know, anymore. I mean, it used to be that the players are committed to the school, but it's like, I don't believe that. I mean, players are committed to their coaches. I mean, they're the ones that are recruiting them. They're the ones that are telling them, this is what we're going to do for you. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to make you. This is what we're going to give you the opportunity to do. And all of a sudden that coach leaves. So it's like, yeah, the school is part of it, and it's a big part of it. But if a coach leaves, why shouldn't a player have the ability to leave as well? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm a little torn on both sides of it because I'm a loyal guy. I really believe in loyalty. I committed to that school, my team, that team, and you get a relationship with these guys. My biggest thing is I don't understand why most of them want to, because, you know, I get it. I mean, playing time, whatever it may be, but there's also some loyalty factors in there that you develop, I think, over time, I would hope. That would make it really hard for you to leave, but it seems like guys are just jumping from one place to another, and they're making it easy for them to do that. So I don't know. I have opinions both ways. I do think it needs to be more strict in that, you know, if you're going to transfer, you're going to pay a little bit of a price for it.
Chewy, I look at it as the NFL is going to find you if you're talented and you can go play anywhere and be seen anywhere via TV or social media. So You don't have to be the starting quarterback at USC to go to the NFL anymore. You can go play wherever, and if you got a skill set, they'll find you and hopefully get you at 7 cents on the dollar, knowing the NFL front offices. That said, there's also the realization where kids want it right now. We've always wanted it right now.
Yeah.
But we're not always ready right now. And I think there's a disconnect with how ready you think you are versus how ready you actually are. There are some examples. Adrian Martinez, Fromm down at Georgia, Lawrence at Clemson. Special kids that played early. Tua played early, but Tua also had to redshirt. Eric Crouch had to redshirt. Tommy Frazier didn't start till his sixth game as a freshman. And he's the ultimate example, right? So there are some special instances, some prodigies out there, but it's okay to sit and wait, and instead of flaming out too early when you're not ready and not big and strong enough or don't get it mentally with the game plan, it's okay to kind of gather yourself and go after that starting job again. You'd hope that the job's always open for competition.
Problem is the recruiting aspect of it.
Yeah.
You got it. Most 90% of these kids are not ready to play. Just whether it be physical, most of it's mental, mm-hmm. new environment, getting comfortable in their environment. But a lot of it, they're just not ready to play. But yet, you have to recruit these kids and tell them basically how great they are, how good they are. A lot of cases, I don't know, promising these kids that you're going to come in and start. So if you want to get them, because if you're not doing it, somebody else is doing it. You know, so it's like, even though you know they're not ready, you can't recruit them that way. You got to recruit them like, man, you're a stud. You can come in. You can compete right away. You got a good chance to start, do this, do that. So it's like, it's a double-edged sword because you got to recruit them that way. That's my big thing. The recruiting part of it is so different. You know, it's like, these kids can't compete at that level yet. Mm-hmm. At some time they will, and you don't know when that is. You know, but you can't recruit them that way. You can't tell them that it's like you're a year away before you really probably can compete because they're going to go elsewhere because somebody's telling them something different.
What they want to hear. Someone will tell them.
Exactly.
Someone will tell them the answer they want versus the answer they need. And the key thing, too, is to be right with your evaluation and projection physically and mentally and be on the same page with the kid. And I think that's where Nebraska, when it comes to getting quarterbacks, they're in a great spot with Frost and Super Mario. Shuey, about 30 seconds here, bud. What's on the horizon? We know the Divot Dogs are going on, but plenty of specials going on with Wilderness. And it's going to get, finally, that rain's going to stay away, man, and it's going to be time to swing the clubs, isn't it?
I hope so, man. That rain's putting a damper on things, man. When it's nice out, we're crazy busy, but we've had too many rain days in there. So hopefully that rain goes away. You got the 4th of July coming up. So we do a special on the 4th of July where we do a shotgun in the morning.
Okay.
So you can call out and get a tee time, join our members, and anybody that wants to come out and play 8 o'clock in the morning in our 4th of July shotgun. That way you're done, off, and you can go do your fireworks stuff. So
I like it. Shuey, best to you, man. Thanks for making time today. I know you're busy.
Always. Appreciate you having me on.
Be good, partner. There he is, Mike Shuhart.
All right, you too.
Mike Shuhart with us, Hail Varsity. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. All right, Bill Bender, 10 minutes away. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. And you find us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essences. You consider yourself pretty coachable kid, Elijah. You played on the offensive line for Lincoln Southeast. That's a hallowed position. You played tackle. You protected that quarterback. You blocked for the backs. Southeast, a power program for years. And I don't imagine you, like, just thinking you knew it all, even when you earned a starting spot.
No, that's not really who I am.
No, it's not.
No.
It's not.
I mean,
did you have friends and teammates, though, that were kind of out there?
I think on previous teams that weren't as good, we had a lot of guys who weren't as coachable. Thought they were
That's just got to piss off the coaches.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean...
just do what I say, please.
The reason we're not good is because you guys aren't being coached. You've shut yourself off to the coaches. I think that's what any good team has, is being just coachable.
Yeah.
Like, you think the Duke Blue Devils this year were uncoachable just because they were All-Stars?
No, man. They're all three top 10 picks, but you look at Zion's personality. I mean, dude had a rock solid mom who probably said, "Zion, you're cleaning your room and you're not going to your AAU game." I mean, just don't know them, but projecting a little bit about how that household ran. Rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm. Dude was the hottest NBA prospect since LeBron James, and you could even see his progress through the year.
Yeah.
You could tell he was getting coached in a college setting by one of the best college coaches to ever do it.
Well, he's probably getting challenged, too. And it wasn't just put my feet up. And there are some kids, because you know the personality and you've bonded with, you can get in their kitchen a little bit and they'll respond to it. Don't be mean for being mean's sake. Don't yell just because that's the only way you know how to communicate. But just depending on what can wind somebody's clock, know how to push those buttons and get the best out of them.
I think Bo Pelini was great at that in his time at Nebraska. He brought in guys, I think, that liked to be coached like that. Or
learned to be liked to coach like that.
Even Taylor Martinez, there were shots of him just getting ripped on the sidelines, and I felt he came back and responded better after he got ripped. Which, I mean, the cameras would pick it up and everyone go, "Ooh, Bo Pelini yelling at a player, that doesn't look good. But I think some players need that and respect that in a coach.
You sit down with Ndamukong Suh ever, I mean, look at his jump and look how he's responded favorably in the NFL, where he's got kind of an intense coach that you can, his personality is such that you can get after him. Schwartz in Detroit. I don't know that Wade Phillips is a screamer, but Wade's a guy that can connect, and he's brilliant. But also Bo and Carl, I mean, what they helped turn Sue into, phenomenal talent. But they knew how to kind of mine that. Your viewing priority tonight is what? The Democratic debate, Vandy, Michigan, U.S. Panama Gold Cup, something else. This a Darren Revelle poll, and right now something else is leading the way. Are you all over U.S. Panama?
It's not the best matchup. I thought about going out to Kansas City, but I didn't want to waste my gas money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably going to be number one College World Series. If College World Series is a close game, it's not getting flipped over.
Right.
If it's, you know, 5-1 in the seventh, I might flip it over.
To soccer?
Yeah.
Well, right now, something else. And U.S. Panama edging the Democratic debate. Vandy in a tight second place. Bill Bender's Sporting News. College football next.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you. It's Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We're going to talk some college football with Bill Bender, the Sporting News. Follow Bill on Twitter at BillBender92. Bill, we're, 9 Saturdays away from the glorious return of college football. How have you been?
Oh, I've been good. You know, trying to enjoy the summer. And as you said, with each Saturday, we get a little bit closer. It should be... I know you guys are excited in your part of the country, so I'm just going to let you fire away.
I'm going to get there in a minute, but I loved your story on Michigan and the College World Series. Let's go there first. Game 3 tonight against Vandy. And what's this Michigan run kind of meant to you, a guy that's in Big Ten country? Is it something bigger? Is it maybe a starting point of a better Big Ten baseball league, a more respected baseball league, or is it just a nice story that Michigan got to the College World Series and they're in the finals?
I hope it's the start of something more, because you know how the Big Ten works. If Michigan wins tonight, then Ohio State's going to want one, you know? And then Nebraska's a little bit different, obviously, because of the success they had in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been there, done that too. But I think the fact that a Big Ten team hadn't won three in the winner's bracket since 66, it's been pretty amazing. And again, I always tell people, and I think you guys can relate in Nebraska. If somebody asked me, well, why don't they play baseball in Big Ten country? And I said, when I was a freshman, we played a doubleheader in 4 inches of snow and 10-degree weather, and I was finding a new sport pretty quick after that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it does have to do with the weather, believe it or not.
It is. It's. Nebraska lost 19 games this year due to weather. So it is a factor. It's a factor with recruiting, and it's a factor with some development. Honestly, are you getting kids that play summer ball, but you can go south and get kids that play ball year round. How polished are you getting talent to come into Division I play? How do you feel about tonight? Do you have a thought here? Do you think Kauffman gets it handled?
Yeah, I think they're going to split those two pitchers. And, last night you figured early that Rocker was on Vanderbilt. It was going to be tough to beat them last night. But I think all bets are off. The key for Michigan, I believe, is the same as the key in game one. Get a couple runs early. Mm-hmm. Get that confidence back that they've had throughout the entire tournament. And go from there. I think it'll be tight. I'm going to pick Michigan because I'm the Big Ten homer here. But I think it'll be a fun game.
Bill Bender's with us, Sporting News, Hail Varsity Radio, at Bill Bender 92 on Twitter's where you follow him. We'll get into football now. And you've done some really nice stories, top coaches. You ranked all 130 Division I coaches. Also, you went down the list of toughest stadiums. I know Memorial Stadium did not make your list, and quite frankly, Nebraska's home record the last several years, nothing to really brag about. Do you get the sense that Nebraska may be on the way back to making Memorial Stadium a place that you don't come in and win at? I mean, is Memorial Stadium under Scott Frost going to be capable of having that same type of intimidation factor that you have at Beaver Stadium or the Shoe or even Iowa City? Kinnick's been great at night for Iowa the last several years.
I think that's the start to any national championship program. If you go back to the 90s, obviously Memorial Stadium was, market L if you were going in there. Mm-hmm. You were going to lose. And, a lot of that has to do with wins and losses, but it's always been a special venue. Any place that can sell out a spring game, how much it means to the fans. So I guess to answer your question, we'll start to get an idea for that on September 28th when the Buckeyes roll in, because I think that's the big spot. And I don't know if we touched on this last time I was on your show, but I always, again, as a guy that, grew up with all these Big Ten East powers, so I believe Michigan's gone to Lincoln at night and lost. Ohio State has. Michigan State has. I don't know what the Penn State series with Nebraska is, but I'm pretty sure it's back and forth. And, if Nebraska can score a win there, which will also be Ryan Day's kind of first big game with Ohio State, if both teams are undefeated, I will say this, I'm pretty sure game day will be there.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's the anticipation to your Penn State point. The last two times Penn State's been to Lincoln, 2012 was a 2:30 kickoff. O'Brien's squad was feisty. That was a really good Penn State squad right after the sanctions that first year. Nebraska kind of had to win a shootout against Penn State, got down early. And then Joe Pa brought the Nittany Lions in 2003 for a night game. And it was a throwback slugfest 20-17 type ball game. Penn State and Nebraska haven't hooked up a lot in Lincoln. It's been more trips out to Happy Valley. But I look at Memorial Stadium, and as a student in Nebraska and growing up here, my family had season tickets. I mean, we were there for a lot of Saturdays, man, where Nebraska didn't lose a game. They were approaching that Miami record, the old graveyard, the old Orange Bowl that I don't know if it was, 51 straight wins. Nebraska was there until Ricky Williams and Mack Brown ruined it. Game day would be such a treat. Nebraska fans would go nuts. Ohio State is still the team to knock off in the Big Ten. Do you see the Ohio State game as the biggest game of the year for Nebraska? There's some debate whether or not it's Ohio State, whether it's one of the West teams that have clobbered Nebraska, Iowa, or Wisconsin. Even Colorado, that's a road game, but that's the second game of the year that could springboard you. Which one would you put the most importance on?
I think the Wisconsin game will be huge, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then, the Ohio State's kind of the look-at-us game because, like you said, game day could be there. And but you could still lose that game and win the Big Ten West. So I'm looking at Wisconsin because I think they're going to have something to say after a rough year. That's one where they're going to be pretty good. Iowa will be a huge game. Thing with the Big Ten West, Chris, is all of them are going to be big because when you have a division where six teams think they can win it, and that's with all apologies to Illinois, I don't think they have a chance. The other six do. And I think that's where all these home games become very important. So Nebraska has some interesting twists in their schedule, but really all six of those games are important. And they kind of, you know, with the crossover games, they did okay. A team like Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin has to play Ohio State, has to play Michigan. I think they got Michigan State on there too. So Wisconsin lost the crossover draw.
They did. Nebraska's lost the crossover draw the last couple of seasons, and it is kind of feast or famine with Nebraska with their schedule, because the odd years you get the Wisconsin, Northwestern, Iowa trio in Lincoln. The even years, you got to go on the road for all three with Northwestern and Minnesota. I've kind of looked at the West race, and you've got the big three in Lincoln with Northwestern, Iowa, Wisconsin. You're also at Purdue and at Minnesota, and Nebraska's lost at Purdue recently. Nebraska lost at home to Purdue. Nebraska's lost at Minnesota the last time they went there as Fleck drilled Nebraska. So those aren't easy road trips. I don't know what to make of Maryland. It's sandwiched in between Wisconsin and Iowa. Maryland's had great talent. They've just been injured. So the schedule looks easier. I don't know that it's going to be easier. And when you look at the kind of these seven games we've been talking about, I think a 5-2 number is where you got to shoot for Nebraska to realistically be in that West race towards the end of the year. Is that too high? Do you think that's about right when you look at just how even the West could be?
No, that's fair. That's a fair number. I mean, if you go 5-2 or 5-1 in the division, or I think 4-2 might be able to win the division, depending on if you get two or three of the crossovers.
So gotcha.
You're looking at 6-3, and then you'll have a chance. And that's what I'm saying. Like, the Big Ten West race is going to be very intriguing, but I don't think you're going to get a playoff team out of it because they're going to beat each other up a little bit. You may be – I think the key for Nebraska, you mentioned those games, got to beat Purdue, got to beat Minnesota, got to beat – I want to say Northwestern. I think Northwestern's going to be pretty good with Hunter Johnson.
You're right.
You know, they're going to play with a ton of confidence. They always do with Pat. So I think, you know, the Minnesota and Purdue games become important to take care of business there. Beat Illinois, obviously. And then you take your swing and try to get two of three with Illinois, Wisconsin, and Northwestern. Maybe even one of three and hope that some of them lose the crossover games. You know, Northwestern has some tough crossovers as well. They get Ohio State on the road. So, yeah, I think it's doable. But I would say 6-3 could win the Big Ten West. I could be off on that. 7-2, you're probably in really good shape.
No, and Northwestern went 8-1 last year. Let's spend a second on Northwestern. Why is Northwestern so good in close football games? Nebraska was not last year. Nebraska has not been good in one-score games the last several years. Northwestern's been phenomenal. What do you chalk it up to?
Well, I think they're coached so well by Patrick. So I'll put it to you this way. When Northwestern isn't overwhelmed by the other team's talent, and I say that in terms of, take Michigan, for example, last year. They were up 16-0 on them, I think. Mm-hmm. And they end up losing the game because Michigan had just that much more talent, was able to kind of suffocate them on defense and get back in the game. And Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship, they were just overwhelmed by what the Buckeyes had. When their talent level's pretty even, they'll probably beat you because they keep everything in front of them on defense. Mm. And I know that's a cliche, but they really do. Their coverage, they keep everything in front. Don't give up a big play. And then on offense, you know, they're systematic. They have a system that works. And I think Hunter Johnson's the most talented quarterback they've ever had in terms of recruiting ranking, arm strength, those kind of intangibles. So I think we're almost talking so much about Nebraska, Wisconsin, and in some cases Iowa with the experienced quarterback and defensive line that we're forgetting that Northwestern won the division last year and is capable of doing it again.
They are, and they kind of like being under the radar. They kind of like being disrespected, and The minute you do that is when they punch you in the face, and they claimed the West last year. Bill Bender, a couple more minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio, talking college football. Follow Bill on Twitter, at BillBender92. And we've hit on Northwestern. When you look at Nebraska now, year two, Bill, what are your expectations for the Nebraska defense? That's been on, and that's been a topic of conversation. You know, it's got to be better, yes, but define better. What does better look like for you, Nebraska, when it comes to Nebraska and those black shirts defensively?
Maybe 5 to 7 points per game.
Okay.
And I say that in terms of it's doable, but when you play the Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, you go back and look at those losses last year, those offenses were scoring well over 30. And I know it's an offensive game. I get that. And you're going to get in shootouts with the Big Ten teams that have offensive talent like Ohio State did. But, I mean, you go back to that Ohio State-Nebraska game last year, and they were playing tight. I remember watching it. But the fact that Nebraska had to fake a punt because they couldn't trust their defense, you don't want to do that on the road. Scott Frost needs a defense they can trust, that they can go win. If they get that, and I would say a 5 to 7 point difference, then we'll see some movement. I do think that's the key for them. I have very few questions about their offense other than, you know, what's running back going to look like.
Right.
The defense, I want to know what they're going to do against the top-shelf Big Ten competition, and that's the difference, Chris, between 10-2 and 7-5, I suppose.
I think you're right. And, you know, 5 to 7 points, that's a possession. That's a score. That's a special teams play. That's you look at the buffer zone here with Nebraska. Ohio State put up 36, Iowa 31 points at the buzzer with the field goal. A low-scoring slugfest against Michigan State, but you know what Michigan did offensively early in the year, and even Wisconsin, they put up 41 on Nebraska. I think Nebraska's defense will be better. They're going to be good in the back end, and the defensive line will be deep. They're thin at linebacker, but I think they can get it handled. They're just they're more comfortable offensively. There's question marks with center and running back, yes, but there's a lot of faith in the Frost system with him calling plays, and of course Adrian. And let's spend a second on Adrian. Tremendous, absolutely phenomenal freshman year. Taka Adrian in New York City, if things go appropriately for Nebraska fans. But what's reasonable for Adrian? And are you looking at rushing yards for Adrian this year? I think there's a little more stability with the backup situation. Could you see Adrian get close to 1,000 on the ground? Do you think Nebraska will run him that much?
In terms of just stats, he's probably the best bet to put up the best stats with running plus passing,
mm-hmm.
other than maybe Justin Fields at Ohio State. And that's, you can win a Heisman that way. Lamar Jackson did that.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Griffin III did that. Johnny Manziel did that, where they do factor in a quarterback that put. Kyler Murray did that last year. I mean, I voted for Tua last year, and I'm sticking with it. I know Kyler won, but, so if Adrian Martinez has the numbers, which I think he will in that system, Nebraska wins 9 games, maybe steals that Ohio State game, and he has a remarkable performance. And Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa are going to sit out a lot of fourth quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Tua barely played in the fourth quarter last year. I don't see that changing much this year. So, there's a chance for him to be a finalist and maybe even win it. And I know the audience here, and I don't want to get you too fired up, but I've just seen it before with Lamar and RG3 and Manziel, where those weren't national championship teams. They just had ridiculous numbers.
They had insane numbers, and you got that moment where Lamar is going video game every Saturday and Johnny wins in Tuscaloosa, right? I mean,
yeah.
Iconic moments, and you have an early opportunity with the Buckeyes coming into town on that Saturday. We don't know if it's a night game yet. Let's hope for everyone's sake it is. That'd be an incredible atmosphere. Bill Bender, Sporting News, with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, at BillBender92. Bill, we'll get caught up again. Always fun to chat college football. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me. Let's do it again soon, and I'll appreciate it and talk again.
Gotta love Bill Bender talking some college football, thoughts on Nebraska, their schedule. Aaron Sorensen coming up. Phenomenal read in the latest Hail Varsity yearbook. Her time with Adrian Martinez. Hail Varsity continues.
chime in, 402-466-ESPN, or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to you. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. A reminder, if you're moving in 2019, give your friends at West Blue Realty a ring. Tom Luby, Kelly Hoffschneider can take care of you. You mentioned Hail Varsity for a limited time. West Blue Realty will provide you up to $1,000 upon the closing of your next home purchase. Tom Luby's number at 402-540-3768. Kelly Hoffschneider, 402-202-2312. It pays to work with West Blue. You can see their smiling faces in the Hail Varsity yearbook. You can read Erin Sorensen's amazing story and her time with Adrian Martinez in the yearbook. Erin, phenomenal work. Thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Are you headed down to TD Ameritrade?
I'm not. I thought Michigan was going to get it and just take care of business last night, so I wasn't prepared for a third game today, so I'll just be watching from home. But it's a beautiful night for it.
Yes, we are throwing the TV on and the grill. I was being difficult with what type of pork chops I wanted during the break, apparently. So I got yelled at. So take me through your idea here for the yearbook and just how it got executed, because you did such an amazing job with your storytelling on the day in life of Adrian Martinez, a day in his shoulder pads or in his Adidas, so to speak.
Yeah, actually, you know, Brandon Vogel and I started kicking around this idea. I had kind of said something to him, I think, in passing last fall about, you know, just what it's like to be a student athlete, but specifically to be Adrian Martinez, the student athlete, and what a day is like for someone like him. And, you know, started kicking that idea around, started asking people if it'd be possible to do. And, you know, it just worked out during spring football. We found a Wednesday. It was practice number 11. And it was sort of just, like I said, it just kind of was perfect. It worked out for him and his schedule to let me just kind of follow him for the day. And it was all just really prompted by a question, which was, what do you think that's like? And I think that's how a lot of Hail Varsity stories start, is we just say, what do you think that's like, or what do you think happened here, or why do you think that happened? And it just sort of spirals and it snowballs, and that's what happened here. And I was very fortunate that as I brought it up to people to tell this story, even beyond Hail Varsity but the university, everyone was really on board, and it was a cool experience. And I was so fortunate to have so many people really on board with the idea of doing it.
Erin Sorensen's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine, at Erin Sorensen on Twitter. Her feature and time with Adrian Martinez, the latest Hail Varsity yearbook. It's incredible. Adrian's on the cover with the red cover. It's in mailboxes. It's on newsstands shortly. We got ours delivered to the station today, and I think it's just really cool. I need to get your take on what was unexpected for you as you were following along. What surprised you? What left a lasting impression?
I think there's like two things that really stood out to me. And one is just his, and some of it's sort of obvious. You'd hope that this would be the answer, but until you really see it for yourself, but his commitment. I mean, he lived on campus up until the end of his freshman year. And you would think when you are able to, you know, when you only live a 10 to 15 minute walk from your home, that you would maybe make that happen if you had a little downtime. Well, first and foremost, he doesn't have downtime, but his commitment to just being present, his commitment to sticking around the stadium, even when maybe he doesn't need to be there, his commitment to walking with his friends and teammates to class, to being there for them. And then on top of it, he's really working at being a leader off the field. So everything that we're seeing Coach Frost and Coach Verduzco preach to him on the field, he's applying those things in his everyday life. And it's these little details when people read the story. I don't want to give too much away, but there's little moments where you see him applying the things that we hear Frost say, I need him to do this on the field. You see him applying those things to his walk to class. And those are those things where it's like you would sort of expected it, but seeing it firsthand definitely, it really stuck with me and really gave me a better understanding of who he is, but really what kind of talent he can develop into if he's so attentive off the field as well as on it.
Erin Sorensen's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Her story on Adrian Martinez, the one of many fabulous reads in the Hail Varsity yearbook. That's the thing that has been like a bullet point about Adrian is his maturity, right? But, Erin, you got to witness kind of firsthand, away from cameras, away from a podium, away from a practice, the off-the-field stuff that's so vital for a team to develop. You got to see that, didn't you?
Yeah, and I mean, he really is a very, very mature individual. And I think, you know, we sometimes in the media, we have to kind of think about how we're describing these young men and women for these teams and just making sure that we're characterizing them. Sometimes it can be really easy to just say, oh, they're so mature for their age, but he really is. And, you know, I had to appreciate this. And this is something that didn't make it in the story, but I can say, in a moment where I just had a chance to kind of just talk with him one-on-one, he grew up most of his life sort of as an only child. He now has, you know, he has a younger brother. He has a bigger family now, but he grew up a lot of his life sort of as an only child in a way. And because of that, he felt like his parents really sort of had him learn at a young age how to talk with adults, how to be around adults. And I really resonated with that. I was an only child. I am an only child. So when he was talking about that, I immediately got it. And so just to kind of see like where he's coming from, how he grew up, and because of how he was raised, how he's applying that to his life, I could also really relate to it because I may be significantly older than him, but it's like, I know where you're coming from. That's how I was raised. I was around a lot of adults. And so, yeah, you can see that. So when we say he's mature, it's really, really, it's true. He's very mature for his age, and, you know, I think that's going to serve him well as he continues down whatever this path is for him as a quarterback at Nebraska and hopefully beyond.
In your time around him and when he interacted with the team, how would you describe his – I mean, I've interviewed him, you've interviewed him, you got a day with him, and the time, the access you had is incredible because it started super early and it wasn't an early morning and then half a day. It was a full day, and you can read just how it's chronicled in Erin's story. But your time around him, personality-wise, what strikes you? I know we touched on the maturity side, but you're also a 19, 20-year-old kid as well. What did you notice about his personality that stuck with you, aside from the maturity?
Yeah, he's actually, I think, quite a bit shy. And, I mean, not so much where he's not speaking to people, but he's definitely somebody who sort of allows his friends and his teammates to, he's not trying to be overbearing over mm-hmm. anyone. He's very much, he's a little bit shy. He's definitely an observer, I would say. He sort of sits back and observes. But when he does, he's got a good little sly sense of humor, I would say, kind of watching him. He's got a little kick with him. It's fun to watch him because, like I said, he doesn't necessarily, he's not this big, boisterous personality, at least not in his everyday life. But when he's got a good little joke, he can throw those little, like, digs in there in a way, and you can tell his friends appreciate that. So his personality is definitely one where it's interesting because he's not a natural-born vocal leader. That's just not how he is designed. But he's really learning how to be, because his everyday like go-to is sort of to just kind of be there and be present, but to really kind of let everyone else around him shine too. So he's definitely not a flashy guy. He kind of just lets everyone else have their moment. And I think that was pretty cool to watch with him because he's not somebody that you can miss, but he's not drawing attention to himself by any means.
He's a regular dude. Does he like the challenge of having to be that leader? And I go back to your quote and the quote that we remember from Coach Frost about Adrian needing to lead on and off the field. Right or wrong, he's chosen to live that and that's not really wrong. What I'm saying is, even if it's not comfortable for him, he's getting out of his comfort zone. But is that something that is difficult for him?
I think that it is, but I think he appreciates a challenge. So I'll give an example that is not even related to football, but he has a 3.5 GPA at this point in his collegiate career. And he, for instance, one of his classes that I actually was with him that day, he basically had higher than an A in that class. He was doing so well, and he was very proud of that. He's very, like, it's almost like he wants to be as good at anything he can be. And so when you have Frost saying, we need him to be that leader, we need him to do that stuff, it's a challenge for him. I think that he has that competitive nature, which we certainly see in a lot of the games where he's putting that extra, you know, he's getting that extra yard. He's pushing a little bit further to get just what he needs. He's like that everywhere. When it comes to his grades, he wants the best possible grades he can get. He wants the best from his teammates and his friends, and he expects that of himself too. So it's even like what he's picking to eat. It's very much, he's thinking about it from a very like specific reason. So when it may not come natural to him to be a leader, but he has definitely taken Frost's words and Verduzco's words, and it's a challenge for him. And I think he's really committed to being the best he possibly can be at accomplishing what they want him to do with that as a leader.
Darren Sorensen with us here, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Aaron Sorensen on Twitter. Her feature, Day in the Life of Adrian Martinez, as Aaron got incredible access to spend the day, what it's like for Adrian Martinez to go from A to B to C to D throughout the day during spring football. Aaron, this was incredible. It was so much fun to read. Tremendous work on it, and the yearbook itself with Brandon and Mike and Jacob and Derek and Greg. I mean, I can't wait for Nebraska fans to get a hold of the 2019 yearbook. It is big time. Got about 15, 20 seconds. What else is coming up from you?
Oh, we're just getting ready. It's hard to believe, but Big Ten Media Days will be here before I know it, which really is the unofficial kickoff. So then we'll be getting ready for August 2nd, which is when fall camp gets started. So it feels like we have a little bit of summer left, but we're really just gearing up for all the excitement to start. So it's going to be here before we know it, and that's kind of hard to believe, but I'm ready for it.
It'll be good. Can't wait. Thanks for the time and great stuff today.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Aaron Sorensen with us on Hail Varsity. Great story on Adrian Martinez. I advise you to read that in the yearbook. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. As we say hi to Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, we've not spent a lot of time on Tommy Johns, but there's another big-time flamethrower that's going down with Tommy John. Cards' Jordan Hicks is injured.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw that, I think within the last week, he had gone down with what they're calling a Tommy John injury. I don't think he'd had issues with this before, at least not that they've been talking about. But at any rate, they said that he has a Tommy John. It looks like he's headed off for another opinion. And unfortunately, probably going to be shut down and probably talking about surgery at this time.
You know, and it's more of a common procedure. You have guys that come back from it all the time. It's not as it's not career ending anymore like it could be or it used to be. But each instance is different. And let's discuss a little bit with Tommy John just the difficulties from your guys' perspective, the surgeon, when it comes to doing something like this, and then from an athletic standpoint, just what keeps guys from maybe returning to form, and what are some instances where guys come back even better? Because that's happened too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, you look at the preliminary data on this stuff, and it's pretty good early on in terms of the return rate. You know, the return rate on these is very high, and a lot of studies kind of north of the 80-90% for a return rate to the same level or higher, which is a really pretty successful surgery when you're talking that high caliber of an athlete. So from that perspective, at least initially, it looks pretty good. You know, from a surgical perspective, at least from a surgeon's perspective, very technically demanding surgery. Basically, what you're doing is you're taking a ligament from somewhere else on the patient. Oftentimes, we can use a little ligament in the forearm called the palmaris longus. Not everyone has one of those, and if they don't, then you can borrow a tendon from elsewhere. But basically, you're taking and weaving a ligament. You're recreating a ligament on that inside portion of the elbow. Again, everybody's aware of what we call the Tommy John ligament, but exactly what that is it's a ligament on the very inside part of your elbow. If you feel the kind of bony prominence on the top part on the inside of your elbow, that's where that would attach, and then it kind of goes down a little bit just into the forearm. And that ligament's called the ulnar collateral ligament is actually the true name of what that ligament is called, but the first gentleman to have the procedure done was Tommy John, and that name is stuck. At any rate, you have to recreate that ligament, and to do so, that little small bump that you feel kind of on the inside of your elbow at the top, it's called the medial epicondyle. It's a very small structure, but in order to put the ligament through, you actually have to drill a couple of little tunnels in that area that are quite small. That bone's very fragile, so you got to be very careful with that so patients don't have, you know, a stress fracture there, or you can even, you know, fracture it while you're doing the surgery. And so it's a very technically demanding operation. And the next thing is, once you kind of weave the ligament through there, is getting the appropriate tension on the ligament. So at least from a surgical perspective, it's very technically challenging. Early on in this procedure, the big question mark was what to do with the nerve that's there. And so oftentimes you'll call that little bony prominence your funny bone. There's a nerve that runs right behind there called your ulnar nerve. Initially, they did nothing with that. And then as Tommy John did, he actually needed a surgery later to move the nerve to get rid of the irritation there. So now the kind of standard fare is to recreate the ligament, and then you actually move the nerve. It's kind of the standard procedure now, so it doesn't get irritated with the new ligament there. And that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. And it's a long haul. You know, you're looking at a good, probably 14 to 18 months of a recovery with this type of procedure before you're back kind of throwing it at a high level.
You look at Jordan Hicks, that's who we're talking about, the flamethrower for the Cards, the closer undergoing Tommy John surgery, is done for the year. That reported yesterday by the Cards, 22 years old. And, I mean, his four-seam fastball hits at 101 miles per hour. What's the main reason this happens to a guy? Is it mechanics? Is it overuse? Is it just wear and tear? I mean, how can some guys throw this type of heat and not have issues? And how can it happen to such a young, promising player in the NL Central?
Yeah, you know, great questions. And all probably factors in this, you know, could be a one-time traumatic event, although that's quite rare. It's usually kind of repeated stress over the area. In fact, one of the definitions of a Tommy John injury is small micro tears occurring over time for a long duration, eventually becoming a bigger tear, is usually how these occur. You know, it's pretty amazing when you look at some of the miles per hour that these pitchers are throwing. You know, that's one side of it. So you think about the force that goes through it, just trying to generate that. But if you really look at them biomechanically, you know, you look at some of these great kind of high-speed camera shots that people will take with these pitches, and you look at that position right before they're in that final kind of cocking phase, fully extended, ready to start throwing, and you see the position of that elbow, and you think about the force that goes through that. That's pretty incredible to think about, that force that's going through there. And obviously, at some point, you're essentially trying to load that ligament to failure. It's amazing at that higher level when folks are throwing the ball that hard that there's not more of these, you know, injuries occurring. But essentially what happens is over time that ligament gets a little bit stretched out. We'll start to see, obviously, there's pain that can be associated with it. Sometimes, though, athletes will just notice a kind of drop in velocity as you stretch that ligament out. You kind of lose some of that torquing force as you come forward. And that's oftentimes how some of these athletes will present to us, or their first kind of concern that something is off.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Tommy John surgery and what's in store for Jordan Hicks of St. Louis. Is there a, lack of a better term, evil pitch? Is there a pitch that, just depending on age and growth plate and all of that, that is synonymous with causing Tommy John? Is there something that you as surgeons Dr. Brandon, say, man, keep your kid from throwing that at a young age because we'll see him here in X number of years because it will do damage to that ligament?
Yeah, you know, early on, I think there was a big debate that was out there about, you know, they always thought that, you know, curveballs in a certain age group, especially if the growth plates are open, it can be a pretty devastating pitch to it. And that does have some value, but I think that the core argument for not throwing a particular pitch, it really boils down to mechanics.
Okay.
And so you look at a lot of our young athletes who are out there who are throwing, and even just for them throwing just a normal fastball, a lot of them have, you know, poor technique, and rightfully so. They're growing, they're adjusting to their bodies, their strength is getting better, but they're still kind of adjusting to longer lever arms. And so from a mechanical standpoint, I think that's really the key issue, is if you have good mechanics and you can take those good mechanics of the fastball and transfer that to a curveball, and you still have good mechanics of the curveball, then there really should be no difference in the amount of damaging force that goes through that elbow. But where we see the big trouble is athletes that don't have great technique to begin with the fastball, and then they start trying to throw other stuff, slider, curve, even a change for that matter, and they start doing different techniques, putting different forces, unhealthy forces on the elbow. And I think that's really where the trouble starts. And that's what I always try to educate our patients and their families about. So that's a big part of it. But the other thing that's probably the more important factor here, Chris, is really the volume.
Gotcha.
It's the volume of pitches that kids are throwing. And these pitch counts have tried to address that. And that's really key. And so the volume thing's important. I think the numbers on those volume counts are pretty good, but definitely there are some variations there. You know, I think there's some folks that probably generate more force when they throw, and then they probably shouldn't throw as higher velocity or high as volume. And so you really do have to listen to some of their symptoms. The other area I see troubles is folks will pay attention to their pitch counts with pitching, but then the next night they're playing catcher, and they should be resting in between. And so then you go and you play catcher the next night or the next five nights, and you pitch again. And so basically you're pitching every night. And it's interesting when you talk to families about this, they don't think about that. And so those are the kinds of things that we really try to combat first. It's really a big kind of volume issue, probably more than anything else, more than a technique or a certain pitch that you throw. You can really educate coaches and families on volume. That's really the key thing.
Dr. Brandon, this was awesome. Thanks for the time today and getting us up to speed on Tommy John.
Absolutely, Chris. You guys take care.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. Big thanks to Aaron Sorensen, Mike Schuhart, Rick Pizzo, Sporting News, Bill Bender. The podcast will be up. HailVarsity.com. The greatest hits will be SoundClouded by one Elijah Herbal shortly here on the ESPN Lincoln Twitter handle, and already up on ESPN Lincoln, full interviews with Aaron and Bill and Mr. Pizzo. So check those out tomorrow. We are loaded. It's my last day, my last show for the week. Don't get your hopes up, Elijah. What? You and Colton are taking over Friday. I am busy Friday afternoon. I will be chasing a white ball, screaming profanity at it. I'll be doing that with some people. So you guys will rock Friday. Tomorrow, though, our favorite Buffalo Bill, Jeremiah Searles, going to be with us. We will have Uncle Jerry, Coach DiNardo, will join us. And then Brandon Vogel is back from Maine. I need to hear about all this time spent eating lobster and running from black bears. So Vogue's going to be with us, and Nebraska assistant coach Jeff Christie, the pride of Lincoln Southeast, along with Barrett Root, Elijah Herbal, and Mark Schmidt.
Oh, you put me in there. Thank you.
I put my brother in there, too, so I don't feel so special. Oh. Yay or nay on The Office?
Love The Office.
Same here.
Personally.
And I got late to the party because Junior and Mama, that's all that streams at our house on Netflix. It's like they're watching The Office, and it's great.
See, my Aunt Sarah, when I was back in like middle school, The Office was still on TV. They were still making new episodes, mm-hmm. And that's when she told me to watch it. It was on Netflix then, too. So I'd like to thank my Aunt Sarah for putting me onto The Office. And
now Netflix, they bid $90 million to kind of renew keeping it, and NBC's like, no, we're going to spend $100 million. And we're going to put it on our own digital platform that they have. and we're going to sell ads for it. Novel, right?
And not as many people are going to watch it, but they're going to make more money.
But if you haven't cut the cord, I don't think you're going to get hosed on this. And I asked this question earlier on the KFOR Morning Show. Is $10 a month too much to have The Office? I mean, theoretically, you could go dust your Blu-ray off and by now probably spend $8.99 on all the seasons and save some money. I don't know.
I think the problem is that all these new the stations are going and they're getting their own shows and putting them on their own streaming platforms. And I'm not going to go pay $10 for four different streaming platforms. Right. I'll go pay $10 for one.
Right.
So
is can you get The Office on Prime? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Because there are crossovers where you can get, if I wanted to watch Dexter, right? Showtime show 100 years ago. Good stuff. It was on Netflix and it was on Amazon Prime for a time.
I don't think The Office is on Prime. I think it's a Netflix exclusive for now.
Okay. Hence the
uproar.
$400 million.
Yeah.
So Carson's just like, well, we'll just have to keep watching it every night until they leave. And once it leaves, we'll figure out a way to get the CBS platform. Because I can imagine Breaking Bad jumping off and going to AMC. Same with Mad Men. I love watching episodes of both of those on Netflix.
Yeah.
But Netflix is, they need to kind of keep cranking out their own content. So we'll talk to you tomorrow at 4. Elijah, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, Chris.
Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.